The Buddha and Women's Liberation. Before I proceed with the talk, I would like to clarify the term liberation. Here in this talk, the word liberation is used to mean two things: social aspects and spiritual aspects. How did the Buddha help the women to get freedom from their social obstacles and barriers? And how did the Buddha uplift the status of the women? This is one aspect of it. The other aspect is, how did the Buddha open the doors to enlightenment to the womankind, and how did he provide the opportunities for the women to achieve spiritual perfection, the real liberation from sansaric suffering? So here onward, the word liberation is used to mean these two things in this talk. Today we are living on 20th century, 21st century. In fact, women are enjoying much more freedom, dignity, and they are capable. They are upholding various positions in different social status and different aspects in human life, in political, economic, social, educational, and whatever the aspects of the human life. In fact, they are doing very well. And they are par with men. We are talking about the women's liberation and the freedom of the women. And today, in fact, the situation is such that the women are enjoying a relatively very high position in this society. But if you want to understand the Buddha's contribution for women's liberation, you have to go back 25 centuries back in the history, 2500 years back, to ancient India. And if you can go back and understand the nature and the position of the women who lived 2500 years back in India, and then you will appreciate the Buddha's contribution greatly. So before I talk about the Buddha's contribution for women liberation, I would like to bring your attention to the general condition of the women in the time of the Buddha. I'm not going into deep details. Well, generally and very briefly talking, in the time of the Buddha, women are not given due social status in the society. In political, economic, educational, or social, or any other aspects in human life, they are in fact recognized as inferior. They are not recognized and they are not given any position. And in fact, the Brahminic tradition, which was the established religious authority in ancient India, they considered women are very low, very inferior, and they are not capable enough, and they always have to live under the men. That is what was the commonly accepted belief and the way. It was a male-dominant society. But for that reason, if you talk about ancient human societies, in ancient time, 2500 years back, Of course, all the human societies are male dominant for that reason. Not only in India, everywhere else also male dominant. There are many stories, poems, incidents recorded, written in Brahmin literature that discriminate the women, belittle the women. I'm not going to talk about them, but just to make the matter clear, I will bring up one point, which is the Manusmriti. Manusmriti is the law book of Brahminism. And there, the rules and regulations for the kings and ministers, for the countries, for the class system, caste system, for the women, all these are written. And there are many things written about the women. And one of the sloka, one of the stanza is this. Pita rakshati kaumare, bharta rakshati yavani. Putra rakshati vanitaki, and stri swatantram arhati. It says that when a woman is a child, that woman must be lived under the protection of father and under his guidance. When that girl is young and in marriageable age, that woman must live under the protection and guidance of husband. And when that woman is old, and that woman must live under the guidance and protection of the son. Na stri swatantra marhati. The women must not be given the freedom of independence. And that was the attitude of the society. Now, there are many other things as well, but looking at this, you can understand it is a very different state from today. In fact, in ancient societies, men are recognized and they are welcome, and because their contribution to the economic, political, and religious and the other aspects of human life. In ancient India also, the birth of a boy, baby boy, is welcome, is a mark of prosperity and success of that family. But the birth of a girl is not welcome. I think even today there are such families. Even today there are parents who also think in such a way. I'm talking about 2,500 years back. One day, the King Kosala, he was having a friendly dialogue with the Buddha. And then a messenger came and said something to the king in a secret way, a pass a message. Having heard, the king became so unhappy. And the Buddha asked the great king, "Why are you unhappy? What happened? Any misfortune?" Then the king said, "The Lord, the Blessed One, the Queen Mallika just gave birth to a baby girl. So that is why he is so unhappy." So the Buddha said these words, "Ittipi ekachya seya posa janadipa medavani silavati sasudeva patibbata." He said, "The Lord of the men, the great king, some women are better than men. Bring up the child, she will be virtuous, moral, and such a girl will be suitable to be a great queen to a great king. Such a girl is suitable to be a great mother to a great hero, a king who rule a country. So this advice of the Buddha to this king, Pasena de Kosala, in fact, expressed Buddha's attitudes towards the men and women. The gender equality, 2,500 years back. Buddha recognized the abilities and skills of the men and women, the equal rights for men and women. Buddha also recognized the differences between men and women. But at the same time, differences does not mean inferior or superior. Men and women, we have to be different. Otherwise, why does a man attract to a woman? There shouldn't be any reason then. So differences are there, but the differences does not mean inferior or superior. And men and women have got their own ability, capacity, skills. So Buddha recognized it. So gender equality. You can refer more details in Dhitu Sutta. Well, Buddha also, through his teachings, he tried to uplift the social status of the women. Because in his time, women were not respected. They were belittled by the men. When Buddha talked about happy married life, how should a couple live happily with mutual understanding and respect as husband and wife? In Sigalowa the Sutta, Buddha gave 10 duties to husband, the 5 duties to husband, and another 5 duties to wife to perform towards each other in order to create healthy, peaceful, happy married life. And among the 5 duties given to the husband, the first 2 duties are this. First duty, husband should be courteous towards wife. Means husband should be polite, should be courteous, and speak in a such a way, behave in a such a way, to respectable way towards the wife, must give the due respect to that person. First duty. Second duty, the Buddha says, husband should not despise the wife. This is the second duty. Here it means you should not speak in a such a way or behave in a such a way to belittle your wife, to make her feel inferior. So these 2 duties, if you were to elaborate very carefully, Buddha expressed very clearly, say that men must respect the women. For men must give the due respect to women. And he expressed it in a positive way as well as negative way when he said, must be courteous, must not despise. Once Buddha visited the Vajji Kingdom. In Vajji Kingdom, it was ruled by a governing body, not by a single person, but a governing body. So Vajji kings, rulers, approached the Buddha. Here the Buddha taught 7 principles to Vajji kings and said, as long as rulers of this government uphold these 7 principles, this country is bound to prosper. This country will not go downward. And these principles are known as 7 conditions for non-decline. Sapta aparihaniya dhamma. Among the 7 principles, the principles that the Buddha taught, the 5th one is relevant to women. Buddha said, As long as Wajji rulers uphold the principles to respect women's decision in their marriage, not a single woman or girl was detained by force, abducted, and in marriage, if they are given their freedom of choice to decide with which man they want to get married or to which family they want to unite, and that is one of the seven principles, and said country is bound to prosperous, society is bound to be peaceful and prosperous. So this is one of the principles. It means in ancient India, in the time of the Buddha, in fact marriage was decided by men, not by women. Even in the family, father is the one who decides to whom his daughter is to be given. That's it. No questioning. Well, that is how the Buddha tried to uplift the respect of the women in his time. In his time, in fact, child marriage was common and accepted. If it is today, you will be imprisoned here in Singapore. Correct? But that was all right ancient time. I would say not only in India, but many parts of the world. That was accepted, and that is how human societies were. In ancient India, in the time of the Buddha also, child marriage was accepted by everyone. No one thought that it is wrong. But Buddha said, it is a cause of downfall of the man and the society. In the discourse on downfall, Buddha says, Atita yobbano poso aneti timbaruttaning tassa issana supati tamparabhato mukam. If a man were to marry a teenage girl, and then there is a cause of downfall of that man. Why? That marriage will not be a successful marriage. And you will suffer a lot. Lot of defilements will arise out of jealousy. You will not have peaceful sleep at night. And you will suffer. You can read more about it in this sutta. What about the polygamy? In his time, the society was such that men could marry many women. In fact, for that reason, kings had many hundreds and thousands. And it was accepted. But this liberty was only for the men, not for the women. A man can marry few women if he so wish. But of course, if a woman were to have few husbands, and that will be an issue, will be a problem. Well, in ancient India, in fact, the polygamy was common and it was accepted. Of course, Buddha's mission was to enlighten the people and lead them for awakening. But in his process of teaching, he also tried to uplift the society and the condition. So here, if you talk about the five precepts, third precept very clearly says that refrain from sexual misconduct. Be faithful to your wife, be faithful to your husband. And the third duty of the husband towards wife, as I mentioned earlier, also to be faithful to wife. So here it means the Buddha in fact encouraged a healthy marriage life. And in the discourse on downfall, in fact, Buddha said that those men who have the extramarital affairs, those who go for prostitution and run after the wives of the others, and that is a social issue and cause of a downfall of human society. Sehi dare hi santutto vesiyasu padissati dissati paradaresu tamparabhato mukha. You can refer in this book, your textbook, Parabhava Sutta. So Buddha says, and being dissatisfied with one's own wife, a man were to see in among the courtesans and other wives, and that can become a social problem and issue, and it is the cause of downfall. So Buddha discouraged. So Buddha in fact tried to uplift the family life, the status of the women in this way. And Buddha also tried to uplift the state of the woman as a mother. In fact, he said, Mata mittang sake gare. The best friend at home is the mother. He did not say father. Mata mittang sake gare. The best friend at home is the mother. And then he said, Mama yati ti mata. One who cherishes and nourishes you than anyone else on this earth is called Mama, Mata. One who cherishes and nourishes you. When Buddha wanted to talk about the love, he took mother as example. Mata yata niyam puttang ayusayika putta manurakhe. In Metta Sutta, just like a mother who protects her one and only child in the risk of her own life. So one should cultivate boundless love and compassion. So in this way, the Buddha tried to uplift the social status of the womankind in his time as a wife, as a mother, and as someone who has got gender equality, equal rights in the society, and as someone whose decision is respected by even by the kings as in government level, and also as someone who has got the right to decide to get married with the partner that he or she wish, and abolish the child marriage, and such way the Buddha in fact tried to uplift the social status of the women. This is only a bit. We don't have time to go to say much more about this matter, but you can in fact go through some of the writings and you can understand much more better. How did the Buddha encourage the women to achieve the real and ultimate liberation through spiritual awakening? And that's also must be taken into careful consideration when we talk about liberation. In fact, that is the most important aspect here. In his time, there were religious traditions who openly said that women are not capable of spiritual awakening. Women will never achieve spiritual heights. Even though there were some isolated women who renounced the lower life and went their own way, but generally speaking, that was the attitude of the men. That was the attitude of the Brahmanism, most orthodox and influential religious tradition. And the Brahmins never accepted it. And they strongly said there's no way for the women to achieve spiritual heights. But the Buddha acknowledged. Buddha not only acknowledged, he declared openly, just like a man, a woman also can achieve the enlightenment. When Venerable Ananda asked the Buddha, the Lord, if the women were given the opportunity to go forth and practice the Dhamma and Vinaya under the Blessed One, is it possible for a woman to achieve the first stage of enlightenment? Buddha said, yes, definitely. What about the second, third, and fourth, and final deliverance? The Buddha said, women are equally capable, like men, to achieve all the four stages of enlightenment. So here Buddha acknowledged and openly declared that men and women have got the equal capacity, ability for awakening. Not only he acknowledged and declared, in fact, he set up a system. For the first time in the human history, Buddha is the one who set up a proper system with proper rules and organized institution for womankind to go forth and practice religious life and become enlightened. At very beginning, Buddha reluctant to start this bhikkhuni order for some valid reason. But after consideration, once after he decided to start the nun's order, bhikkhuni order, he gave his fullest cooperation and guidance to the women, and he started this nun's order. And many women under the Buddha's guidance went forth from home life into homeless life. And these women are coming from all status of life, and from queens to princes, and from all the walk of life. And these women, having practiced under the Buddha's guidance, many of them, they became enlightened. Like monks, they also took the role of propagating the Dhamma. Like the Buddha established in his monk's order two chief disciples, he also gave the two positions to the women, Kema and Upalavana, two chief nuns, bhikkhunis. Like among the monks, Buddha also recognized among the bhikkhunis, those who are well-educated scholars, and the women achieve spiritual heights of different status, and they achieve the psychic powers, supernormal powers. So Kema, Upalavana, Patachara, Kundalakesi, Dhammadina, there are few of the names of these wonderful women. Once Bhikkhuni Dhammadina gave a Dhamma talk, and the Buddha commented. Buddha said, if I were to give the talk under the same topic, I would have done the same way, just like the same way Dhammadina did. Such was his praise. For these women who went under the Buddha's guidance and practice, and they achieved enlightenment. And those enlightened bhikkhunis and their personal experiences of liberation, of experiencing the bliss and happiness of Nibbana, they express through beautiful poems, and these poems are collected to a book. This book is known as Theri Gatha, the poems of the sisters. So these are the experiences of those enlightened women. So in fact, Buddha and women's liberation, when you talk about it, Buddha worked in a such a way to uplift the social status of the women in mundane aspect. At the same time, he also uplifted the status of the women by opening the door to enlightenment and giving them the opportunity to achieve the ultimate liberation. So in fact, we must include the Buddha whenever we talk about women liberation, because many people have forgotten about it. And Buddha's compassion and wisdom regarding this women's liberation is to be seen 2,500 years back in the society. And even today in 21st century that we are living here, when we see his comments and his attitudes, in fact, they are much more modern than today. So they are still fresh and still new, correct? So because even today there are societies where in fact the women's status are condemned and looked down and belittled and seen as inferior, and there are many traditions even today. So the Buddha's the teachings regarding the women's liberation is to be appreciated and be seen under the light of the ancient society 2,500 years back, not under the light of 21st century. Why I mention this? Because today there are some scholars who simply forget this and see some of the incident, specifically starting of the Bhikkhuni order, looking at some of the incident, and they try to come out with a different picture because they fail to see the 2,500 years back, the society where the Buddha lived.